today's episode, we're going to talk about, is my estrogen dose high enough? I'm Dr. Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. So today's question is actually from Leah. She is a neighbor to the north, a Canadian neighbor to the north in Vancouver. We're in northwestern Washington, so I thought this would be an interesting one. She's just not too far away. Why don't you go ahead and read Leah's question? We'll dive right in.
Sure. It's a little lengthy, but I definitely appreciate their verbosity or all their information here, because it definitely helps with answering questions, so that if one person has a question, that means so many other people have the same question. So, from Leah. Hello there. After 6 months of deep diving, I found your site. I feel like no one here in Vancouver has a full hold on how to treat me. Your information has been so invaluable. Thank you. But now I'm worried I'm not being cared for properly. I'm 56, fit, work out regularly at a moderate intensity with muscle training, normal weight, healthy my entire life, no menopausal issues till March. I was a week away from a big gig and then suddenly got this weird, crippling anxiety. It started with a massive hot flash upon waking one morning. Then this feeling like I had just missed being hit in a car accident, like a fright for no reason. It was bad enough the first week that I didn't even want to drive. It settled down to about 30%, so I was able to function, but it reoccurs at this level now, and it's been 8 months. It's the most uncomfortable feeling, and the little things bring it on, like getting ready to go out, and always first thing when I wake up. I started with an OB-GYN who put me on 0.05 estradiol patch with 100 milligrams of progesterone. Hot flashes went away, but nothing else. Went up to 0.075, no change. Also on 2 milligrams of testosterone perivaginally. Then I went to see a naturopath and did a Dutch test. My hormone levels looked as if I wasn't taking anything. Also, my adrenals were fatigued and I had low cortisol. Basically, everything was really low, but the progesterone was okay. My naturopath put me on a 50-50 ratio of a biased, 2 milligrams vaginally applied, progesterone, 40 milligrams transdermal, and I stayed on the oral progesterone. No change after 3 weeks. I feel like I need more hormones. My naturopath says she never gives more than 3 milligrams of testosterone because it can raise cholesterol, but all the research shows for me that I could start at 5 milligrams. Question mark. I also asked her about the vaginal application of the biased and the systemic concerns, and she said because it was a 50-50, the estriol would help regulate the estradiol. After listening to all of your podcasts and reading your case studies, I feel like there's so much contradicting info, and I don't want to apply it vaginally anymore. I feel like my dose is too low, and did I mention, in addition to this weird anxiety, I'm also getting little hot flashes again. I want to enjoy my life and feel like me again. This is insane. Would love to hear your thoughts and opinions. Warm regards, Leah.
Well, that's one that we've heard quite a bit in a roundabout sort of ways. So it sounds like she started on the patch with her gynecologist, went to a naturopath, was put on biased. There's kind of a lot to unpack there. Why don't we back up where it originally started? She was a smooth transition, and like all of a sudden, she started having some anxiety. What do you think that's all about?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, everybody goes through menopause at different ages, some women in their 40s, some women in their early 50s, some in the mid 50s. So everybody's different. So it does look like Leah probably is definitely now in the true heart of menopause. But then you say, oh, she's 56. She might have, you know, that seems a little late for menopause. Mm-hmm. But really, I have women that are still cycling and they're 54 or 55. So everyone's a little bit different. So I would say really her menopausal symptoms of those hormones were really starting to drop, probably really sort of happened altogether. Like it coalesced into one sort of big event here. And granted, she said she had a big gig. She doesn't normally have anxiety, but something probably about preparation with this gig because anytime the hormones drop, which we can also go into, especially that progesterone and that estrogen, is then some of those, the cortisol isn't buffered, which we'll go into a little bit more about cortisol, but the cortisol isn't buffered in any act exacerbated. So that's probably a little bit where, like she was saying about her adrenals, on why that anxiety started to come up.
Yeah. So she had this event that was, you know, probably on her mind, big gig. She uses the word big gig and a big gig. So there's probably a little bit of, maybe not fear per se, but you know, the preparation, getting ready. There's this looming deadline, anxiety goes up. It sort of seems like it's persisted ever since. So what do you think about the two, in some ways, completely different dosing options that she chose?
Yeah, no.
Or was prescribed.
Well, kind of just to kind of circle back a little bit more. I know I want to go down to the bottom part of her question when she talks about the Dutch test, which we'll talk about that and why it showed that she had low cortisol. My first inclination when I was reading this is her having that anxiety, especially first thing in the morning, is a big rise in cortisol in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what happens, like I was saying, you know, the estrogen helps buffer cortisol. So if there's no estrogen around, then that cortisol can kind of take off on its own. Same with progesterone, which is what you normally start seeing more in perimenopause, is when that progesterone dives, the GABA goes down and then your cortisol comes up. And that's why a lot of women in perimenopause will have trouble staying asleep through the night and then also have a little anxiety and irritability during the day. For her, having that kind of a lot of anxiety when she's waking up makes me feel like maybe her cortisol is spiking, but it could be dropping down later, which was why some of the other testing was showing that it was low.
Yeah, yeah. The Dutch test, you know, you and I've obviously have run a few of those. Sometimes when they're on hormones, at least on the estrogen progesterone side, you can't test progesterone through the Dutch test. It's more of a metabolite on the progesterone side. You do get a nice look at estradiol and how it's being metabolized. Of course, the Dutch test is great for the adrenals, but her anxiety sort of tells you one thing. The Dutch test tells you something else. That's a very, you know, very common paradox that you'll see. Sometimes those testing, whatever kind of adrenal testing it is, it doesn't always match up directly with what kind of symptom picture the patient's having.
Yeah, so a Dutch test is a urine test, so it's looking at the hormones. You're right, it's very, it's much more comprehensive than doing a blood test. I mean, I've been doing blood tests, you've been doing blood tests with patients for over 20 years, so we know how to read that, but, you know, a blood test really is just one snapshot, one picture, and one second of your life, of your day, where the Dutch test really is a little bit more comprehensive to be able to put that data together. So I think it's really cool that she has both, you know, that Dutch test, and then we have her symptoms, but I would say that, you know, that anxiety is coming from something going on with the cortisol. And also, as well as when estrogen drops, you do notice that, women will get fearful. You know, they don't feel as brave as they used to be. They'll say, you know, I'm a nervous Nelly, or what do they call it? A worry wart. I get that all the time. Why am I such a worry wart? So there's definitely something probably going on with that estrogen and that cortisol. And then on a completely flip side is when you think about a hot flash, it feels like there's like this sort of like heat coming on internally and then it comes outward in a true, you know, in a typical classic hot flash. And then afterwards, you're actually a little bit colder because your temperature, your core temperature actually goes down after a hot flash because all the heat goes to the periphery. It, you know, comes off of you and then you're actually colder. That's why women will say, oh, I throw the covers on and off at night when they're having their hot flashes. Mm-hmm. But I do find, you know, a smaller percentage of women, maybe between 10 to 15%, experience hot flashes differently. Some women will only have cold flashes, and actually anxiety is another way of, it actually can be a hot flash. They might not feel hot, they might not feel cold, but they have this rush of anxiety and then it goes away and then they're exhausted and tired because, you know, that's how that works. That I wonder if maybe some of this anxiety is really just kind of like her way of having a hot flash.
Sure, sure. Well, hot flashes, just, you know, now she said towards the end of her question that the hot flashes are starting to come back a little bit. When a woman is first going into menopause, the hot flash is the first key sign that their estrogen level is dropping. Now, granted, she's 56, she's been on hormones for a little while, but if she's still having hot flashes, we can assume then that at that point that her estrogen dose is just not high enough. Yeah. That's always sort of the clue that you have as far as which way to go. Do you raise the dose? Do you lower the dose? Now, granted, her naturopath put her on, you know, a relatively smaller dose or a lower dose, but now she's still having hot flashes. So the rule of thumb is you kind of lean into those hot flashes and then and raise that dose.
Yeah, I like that the progesterone dose, the oral, that she stayed on the progesterone. I'm assuming she has a uterus. So if you have a uterus, you really want to protect that lining, which we talk about a lot, so you don't get that hyperproliferation. So I'd like that she stayed on that progesterone. I do find that doing some transdermal progesterone during the day, so you do the oral progesterone at night because it can raise up the GABA, it lowers the cortisol, it can kind of make you relaxed, so you don't necessarily want to do it during the day, or at least most people can't. And then you can do some progesterone transdermally during the day, and it doesn't necessarily create that sort of relaxed, kind of want to go to sleep feeling.
The tired, drowsy feeling. Yeah, right.
And that can help a little with the anxiety. So I like that combination. But you're right. The bias that she's on 2 milligrams as a 50-50 ratio. So that ends up being, you know, a combination of estriol, E3, and estradiol. 2 milligrams as a 50-50 ratio means there's 1 milligram of estriol and 1 milligram of estradiol. And you're right, that probably is a little bit of a lower dose for Leah, especially coming from the patch. Because the patch, even though she was on what seems like a low compared to the estrogen or the bias dose, they're like apples and oranges. You know, a 0.075, a 0.5, you know, of an estradiol patch is so much more stronger than a bias that even is like 5 milligrams. So they're really, when you have somebody on a patch, you do have to go a little higher on the dose until their body gets used to it, and then you can lower it down. Because that's the cool thing with hormones is you never stay on one dose and that's it. You're always changing it because our bodies are changing. Sure. We're getting older. Seasons are changing. Life is changing. So a lot of times you'll end up changing people's doses several times throughout the year or throughout the time that they're on hormone replacement. But I would say that that 50-50 bias is probably a little low. And when it's applied vaginally, because vaginally mucous membranes, I mean, things go right in there. You apply that hormones onto those vaginal mucous membranes, it goes right into the bloodstream. But it doesn't have the longevity when you apply it to a mucous membrane like that.
Well, now you and I would typically probably would not prescribe or would not recommend applying the biest itself vaginally anyways, because we don't typically want to put any estradiol. So as you said, 2 milligrams vaginally, 1 milligram estradiol, 1 milligram estriol, she's applying 1 milligram directly to the vaginal tissue. You know, that's not, you know, that's not really a great idea long term in terms of aligning, thickening, and all those kind of things.
Yeah, she could get a thickened uterine lining, have a little bit of bleeding, which is another podcast we'll talk about from another question that someone asked. But I would say, you know, you could always raise up the progesterone. If she didn't have a uterus, you could put the estradiol on the vaginal tissues. But I think what we're looking for here is, yeah, she's having some mini hot flashes. Hot flashes aren't fun. But the anxiety, like she's saying, the anxiety, and that's a terrible feeling to have the anxiety, that I would consider using it more instead of putting it on topically on the vaginal mucous membranes, is putting it more like which we like is like the inner thigh, so that it can go into that system, go into the bloodstream, and maybe linger a little bit longer, and apply it twice a day. I have a few women, not very many, but when we're really trying to hone this in, I might even have them split up their dose into 3 or 4 times a day to try to keep that level on there. But definitely I would say I'd probably, you know, raise up that estrogen and do it twice a day, morning and evening.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're dealing on the hot flash side, if you're just taking it once, you know, either morning or evening, you are basically starting over from scratch every time you reapply, because you're doing it every 24 hours. You know, so certainly you're not going to necessarily, now granted, her hot flashes don't seem like they're very intense. She says, you know, some hot flashes, that wasn't a big, hers was more anxiety than the hot flashes. Hot flashes, you need it, you know, you really need to do it twice a day in order for them to, you know, kind of alleviate, especially in the beginning. Now, like you said, once you've been on it for a while and hot flashes are not really a big concern, you could go to once a day, and that, you know, for some that is fine. But I've had another one recently where we're doing it actually 4 times a day. Because she was having some issues of it sort of wearing off so quickly, and her anxiety, almost like this one, her anxiety was going up as it was wearing off. So she'd wake up in the morning also with that really intense anxiety, apply the cream, and then it would go away.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, so as her body and her adrenals kind of get used to it after a while, that 4 times a day could turn into 3, could turn into 2.
Right.
You know, so it's really just working with that system. I completely agree with that. And then like you had also mentioned, I think we had talked about this maybe before this, is you could easily raise up her progesterone.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we often go, you know, 125, 150, 200 milligrams, especially for anxiety. You know, that's a nice, you know, counterbalance. And as you are gradually increasing that estrogen dose, or in this case, the bias dose, mm-hmm. You know, 2 milligrams, you know, I often start at 3 milligrams, especially if they're already in menopause.
For
bias?
Oh, for the bias, absolutely, yeah.
For bias, 3 milligrams. And then usually that is a starting point, and then it kind of goes up from there. So if a woman's using a TopiClick, you know, so our standard recommendation with the TopiClick, 2 clicks twice a day, they're getting 1.5 in each 2 clicks. So now, and granted, there's some math there that we'll talk about later. Now she can kind of gradually titrate the dose, and then when it comes time for a refill, then you just adjust the prescription based on that. So usually, you know, you're starting somewhere so you don't make her start bleeding right away. Right. But you're also trying to achieve that dose, and she'll know when she gets to the right dose because her, like I said, her anxiety will go away.
And doing the blood work, like she did the Dutch test, which is really comprehensive, but you could, after you've kind of got the dosing on there, you've raised up the doses, then, you know, check the estradiol levels in the blood, check the progesterone levels in the blood. And there are certain levels for that to be. Same with that testosterone, the, you know, testosterone, I don't think of as the heart of HRT. It's the estrogen. Estrogen is like the cake of it. Yeah. The, you know, the testosterone.
Especially
is,
for a woman, for sure.
Yeah, the testosterone is the accoutrements. It's like the frosting on the cake. But she says, you know, here, you know, Leah's 56. She's fit. She works out. It looks like she's got good normal weight. She eats. She's always been healthy. I wouldn't say you would need to be worried about raising up her progesterone or her testosterone because of her cholesterol, because her cholesterol is pretty darn good.
And she's she's already healthy anyway.
Yeah, she's already healthy. So I wouldn't say there would be any concerns about worrying about her cholesterol. I don't normally see just in my own personal practice, giving a female transdermal testosterone, even in all different sorts of doses, I've never seen the cholesterol go up.
No. I don't even see it really. A woman's dose, you know, let's say 2 to 5 milligrams, maybe a little bit more for some. A man's dose of testosterone is going to be, if you're doing a transdermal cream, let's say 150 twice a day. They're doing 300 milligrams daily, you know, on average. That even doesn't raise their cholesterol.
No, I've never seen it really significantly raise. You know, what I have seen, which is, sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, that's fine. Sharon, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Was when women go through menopause and the estrogen drops, right, that's when I see the cholesterol.
Sure. Yeah, definitely the estrogen plays a role. I think that's where, now we've talked about this on a few other podcasts about cholesterol. Total cholesterol, really don't pay a lot of attention to it. The two numbers that most people should be paying attention to, at least in my opinion, number one, triglycerides. I think that's the most important number that is on your lipid profile. Triglycerides, reference range goes up to 150. I want to see triglycerides less than 75. Mm-hmm. When you are insulin resistant or have some kind of metabolic syndrome, then your triglycerides start to climb. And usually as your triglycerides go up, the HDL goes down. So we want to see low triglycerides and high HDL. Because she's so fit and she's been fit pretty much her whole life, I guarantee you that her triglycerides are well below 75 and her HDL is probably, you know, 75 or higher. Because that ratio, and I've been seeing it all over social media, the ratio triglycerides divided by HDL, you want that ratio to be less than 1.5. Then the total really doesn't matter too much. The total cholesterol does not correlate, but 3 milligrams of testosterone is not going to raise someone's total cholesterol.
No, if anything, it could help you build your muscle mass.
Sure. And especially
muscle mass is great for everything.
Especially if she's fit and she's and she's weight training on a regular basis. There's a really nice synergy. Certainly for men, weight training and testosterone goes very well together. But certainly for a woman, it's hard enough for a 56-year-old woman to build muscle anyways. You give her a little bit of testosterone and that that can be a really nice, a little synergistic effect. I don't think 5 milligrams, though, are, you know, going above 3, I don't think that really, I think it's more about the cosmetic tolerance. If her skin can handle it, if she grows any hair, if she has any breakouts, that's really more of a determinant than anything else. I don't think that there's any negative consequences of having even on a blood test, having a slightly higher testosterone level.
No, because at least here in the United States, the reference ranges for testosterone for a female, they're a little different depending on the lab, but they're so ridiculous, like 2 to 45, some like 7 to 55, like it's just so vast. I'm like, where did that come from? So it does really kind of depend on the female. Now, granted, when someone comes in and their testosterone's at 300 because they think they're putting on a little testosterone's good, but a whole bunch is better, you know, that's not, you don't really want to go that, you know, that high. And then they would know it too, because you get breakouts, you get a little little hair growth. You can start to lose the hair, especially in the temples. That's a big deal there for us females. So I would say, like you said, that's a little more cosmetic, but at the same time, the testosterone, like I said, it's like the finishing touches to something. Like we want to build the house, you know, where I feel like that would be the estrogen and the progesterone, and then layer on a few different things. Even some supplementation might be nice too, like to balance that cortisol, to balance the GABA.
But really, this one now, a little rub just to extend this episode a little bit longer, because when I originally thought this, because of what she says in the beginning, that she's fit, she's always been fit, no metabolic disease of any sort, she works out regularly, she eats clean, she eats healthy, I think that she is a candidate just in general, not her specifically, but just in general, she's a candidate for rhythmic dosing.
I was thinking the same thing too.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. the ones that do really the best on rhythmic dosing are the ones that are just like her. They are taking care of themselves. They are exercising on a regular basis. They are doing all those things. They have no metabolic dysfunction. And all you're doing is really raising that estradiol level. And most of those, the sleep, the anxiety, the hot flashes, you know, they start to, as she says, they start to feel like themselves again, almost like to the point like they're not in menopause anymore. So that was really one that I thought that this profile of a person, you know, Leah times, you know, a few hundred thousand or a few million women, that this is a profile of someone who, okay, she's got some stress. She has, you know, she's obviously doing something, you know, professionally that requires, you know, her to be on point. You know, she has to show up and do a good job professionally. As long as that stress and the metabolic health is not disrupted too much, those are the ones that seem to not do as well on the rhythmic dosing.
Maybe for somebody that might be just introduced to us, do you want to explain what rhythmic dosing means?
Well, I know we've talked about this on a few other ones, and we're going to continue to talk about it because there's, you know, we're going to put together a little report, you know, static dosing versus rhythmic dosing. We go back and forth all the time. This question is really about her. She's asking about static dosing, same dose every day with her bias, but now we're throwing a little rub in there. She wants to feel a certain way. You know, how do you do that? Well, you have to, for a woman, as you said earlier, it's really all about estradiol. You really have to raise that estrogen level. And you're not going to really do that with, you know, 2-3 milligrams of biased vaginally. So rhythmic dosing is really meant to replicate the menstrual cycle or reinitiate the menstrual cycle. So a woman starts on a hormone dose that's quite a bit higher than a typical static dosing regimen, and within 20, you know, roughly between 25 and 28 days, she's going to start to have a period again. Okay, now that's the rub, right? That's the part that most women, they hear that part, and they're like, nope, I'm out, I don't want that. Okay, so then fine. Then their option is left with static dosing. But even on the static dosing, in some instances, the static dosing really doesn't do all the things that a woman wants it to do. So you really need to have those higher levels, but at a trade-off. If you still have a uterus, then that period is going to come back. The period part or the reinitiation of the period is the part that makes it safe to do, mm-hmm. right? The part that you can rest easy because that lining is building up and sloughing off every month like it did when you were 25 or 30. That's also the part that makes it a little bit, you know, unique, to say the least, a little bit controversial. But you know, the way she started out her questions, you know, giving us a little bit of background about who she is and how she lives, I thought that she's a good fit for it.
No, I agree. That's the cool thing about this question here is, you know, there's so many different ways to do hormones. So she's wondering, oh, I want to raise this up. And the doctor's saying, oh, we can't do that because of this. Oh, we'll just give you, there's three different, you know, dosings for the patch. You can pick three and see if it works. It really doesn't. Everybody is so different. You have to figure out what's going to work for one person is going to be totally different for another person. Mm-hmm. So like you were saying about the static dosing, I have a lot of women on static dosing. You have a lot of women on static dosing. Yep. I have a good amount on the rhythmic dosing. You have a lot of women on rhythmic dosing. Like that's kind of one of your, you know, your fortes there is the rhythmic dosing. And it's everybody's different. Like for example, myself, I've been doing hormones for 20 years with women, and now I'm going through menopause. I'm going to be 52 in April of 2025. And so I probably just started going into menopause about 50, a little bit before 51. So I'm doing the rhythmic dosing, and it's interesting because I was doing some static. I've done lots of different things. When you're going through it yourself versus helping other people with it, you really get sort of this different viewpoint. Are you just really, you know, you really start to understand it at its core.
But
I will say for me, I'm a little bit, with Leah, she's talking about the anxiety, like this kind of came on for her. For me, I've always been a little bit of an anxious person, wouldn't you say? Okay, that's just my nature.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, it's not a bad thing and I'm on time. I get things done. I have an agenda.
Yeah.
But I did notice going on the static dosing, you know, just from my own personal experience that my anxiety is a lot better.
On the static or the...
I'm sorry, the rhythmic dosing. Now that I've been on the rhythmic dosing here.
It sort of mellows you out a little bit.
I do feel like it does. I can tell, you know, you can tell it's changing. And the one thing about the period, like you said, a lot of women don't want to have a period. I talk to women like, oh, it's so nice not to have a period. But when you're on the rhythmic dosing, the periods are not supposed to be horrible.
No.
Like they may have been in the past.
Well, the ones that have, that are afraid of getting their period again usually have had a really horrific menstrual history. Mm-hmm. The ones that don't mind it, their periods have always been really simple and easy, and they show up, they're there, they're not a big deal. When I mention that you're going to get a period, and if they don't care, then that's sort of like a clue for me that they are a good candidate for it, mm-hmm. you know, because they don't have any PTSD necessarily about their menstrual history. So it's just no big deal. That's why certain profiles of women, you know, you can kind of go certain directions. That's what our job is. Our job is to figure out what's the best option for the patient. Mm-hmm. That's why I thought for her, because of the background she gave us, and because she's having some really debilitating anxiety, that it's really about boosting up that estradiol level, and her anxiety within a month, her anxiety would be pretty much mostly gone at that point.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, that's the thing, is everybody has their own sort of, you know, issues to deal with. Somebody might be libido, someone else it might be bone density and osteoporosis, osteopenia, someone else it could be anxiety, other people can mm-hmm. be sleep. You know, there's just so many different avenues and goals that we're looking at acutely and then long term. But you're right, for Leah, it's the anxiety. That's what needs to be worked on.
Yeah. From a lab testing perspective, at 2 milligrams vaginally of bias on a blood test, that's what you and I use most of the time, you're not going to see a huge rise to a blood level. You know, the blood level is going to barely get to 50, if that, nanograms per deciliter in America. I know she's from Vancouver, so it'd be a little bit different. But on the rhythmic dosing, after they've been on it for a little while, you're shooting for somewhere between 300 to 350 mm-hmm. on a day 12 blood draw. If the cycle's 28 days, you know, you go to the lab on day 12, because that's where the peak of estrogen, just like when a woman's menstruating on her own, that day 12 is going to be where the estrogen level is the highest throughout the 28 days. And that number for a 56-year-old woman, at least from a gynecological perspective, seems a little bit scary for some.
But they're not realizing that it's changing throughout that. And they're having a period, the lining of the uterus is sloughing off, so there's no risk there. And the estrogen might be high on day 12, but then it comes back down on day 21, day 28. So it's changing, as opposed to with the static. That's where you have to be a little more careful, is you do not want someone at an estradiol level of 250, 300, even, I don't even like it over 100 if they're on a static level, because that tells me that lining, if they have a uterus, may be at risk for getting too thickened.
That other patient I was talking about just a second ago, she was on the patch. She wasn't liking it all that much. Her blood level was 117. I said, you're going to probably get a period pretty soon. And it took another week or so, and she started having a period. Bleeding is not acceptable. Now, we've talked about that. It happens all the time. Bleeding is kind of par for the course when you're on hormones.
But you can't let it linger. If it happens, you got to fix it.
Yeah, you got to fix it.
It happens. But you got to work on that.
Because otherwise, that is dangerous to the patient. Yeah. That's why the rhythmic dosing, because you are purposely controlling the period roughly every 25 to 28 days. Some women maybe go as early as day 21. Some might go like day 30, day 30, mm-hmm. which would be like day 2 kind of thing. No big deal, all right? But now it's predictable. It's going to happen every single month. And if you really want to talk anti-aging, bone, brains, heart, health, all those things. This is really how you, because if you think about it from a woman's perspective, all the age-related problems happen 55 and older. Mm-hmm. If you're keeping those hormone levels, much lower than a menopausal woman or a postmenopausal woman, you're going to be staving off all that age-related disease, for relatively, especially for someone who's fit and healthy, that weight trains, you're going to be able to do that for a very long time. So you're, in a sense, you're sort of slowing down the clock. That I think, everyone's interested in that. Everyone wants to age as slowly as we possibly can, maintain our quality of life and, be as active and as healthy as we want to be for as long as we want to be.
Yeah, and just like she said here, I want to enjoy my life and feel like me again. I can't even tell you, I'm sure you included, how many people have said that same exact verbiage. I want to feel like me again.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I've sort of gravitated, because, you know, what we do is about pattern recognition, mm-hmm. right? A lot of medicine in general is about, you know, you see a group of symptoms in one patient, you diagnose that, you know, set of symptoms, but now you see it over a population of people. You see the same thing over and over, especially when you're as specialized as you and I. Any specialist of any, you know, cardiologist and endocrinologist, they see the same conditions over and over. You get sort of good at treating those conditions. And we've been very focused in our patient base. So you start to see those patterns. And just like you said, I've noticed more positive feedback on the rhythmic dosing side. When it works, it really works. Mm-hmm. And I also know that the rhythmic dosing, unfortunately, even in Canada, rhythmic dosing is sort of hard to find a practitioner that does it. There's this.
She's in Vancouver. I mean, Vancouver's like the New York of.
Yeah. Canada. I mean, I would imagine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure there's.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of great resources necessarily, as where to find them. That's the challenge, right? Because, you know, conventional thinking is you do not want a 56-year-old woman bleeding on a monthly basis. But that's sort of the mental paradigm shift or the mental hurdle to overcome. But the women that I've had, the ones that are go-getters, the ones that are busy, professional, ambitious, driven, exercise on a regular basis, I don't like to use the word thrive, but they, you know, like they said, they feel like themselves. Some of them say they don't even feel like they're in menopause anymore.
Yeah. Okay? Because they're technically not, because you're keeping those levels.
Technically. You know. Yeah. Technically. Yeah,
I've had some women ask me, could I get pregnant again? And I'm like, nope. That's not going to happen.
The husbands that, the women ask that, but the husbands, I've had a few husbands sort of freak out. In this case, in a 56-year-old woman, she's menstruating, but not ovulating.
You're replicating the hormones. You're not. The ovaries, they're retired. Yeah, they're in Hawaii right now.
But still, nonetheless, it's an interesting, it's sort of acute question. And honestly, it makes a logical sense. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't get pregnant with that.
Even my sister said, when she was visiting, she was looking, I was showing her my hormones, and she goes, does that mean you could make a baby? I'm like, no, that ship has sailed, honey.
Yeah. Well, some women, I think, some women can get pregnant, sort of in their 50s.
You could use that maybe differently for fertility or whatnot, but in the case of hormone replacement for menopause,
That's not what we're going for. So I'd like Leah's question in general. We do get these questions all the time, both from Canadians overseas and across America, that there's this tendency to have these lower estrogen doses. Okay. Happens quite a bit. That's why we're throwing the rhythmic dosing idea out there. It's not for everyone. Certainly not. But when you're the right profile, like Leah, and I know that there's, probably hundreds of thousands of women that are just like Leah out there. That's where it's at least worth the try for some. If you can find a practitioner, it's at least worth the try. You can always go back to static dosing later, mm-hmm. Or you can always try static dosing first and always migrate towards rhythmic dosing later on. So it gives lots of flexibility and lots of options.
Or even with Leah, she's working with her naturopath. Less is always best to start off, right? You don't want to do too much of a good thing at once, because then you're trying to back out of maybe having your body not being used to a certain dose. So I could see maybe she's starting off a little lower. Now those baby hot flashes are coming back. The anxiety's still there. Now it's time to raise it up. Raise it up a little bit more. See how you do. Raise it up a little bit more. So I think that's kind of the problem a little bit with some of the gynecologists is they're so busy. Somebody's on their hormones for a couple of months. They're ready to raise up their dose, but they can't get in to see their gynecologist for another 6 months.
Sure.
So it's almost like, with the naturopath, she can, she could see her naturopath have an appointment once a month to go over the hormones.
Sure. And then that dose, kind of gradually gets titrated until Leah feels good.
And they create a relationship where her doctor, her naturopath, feels comfortable working with her. Because I have patients I've worked with for years, and we have this communication. If this is too high, you'll let me know, and I'll let you know. And, we have that where, they're just developing a relationship here. Because that's the thing, like you were saying with other doctors, is they're like, okay, you've got this condition, let's give you this medication and head you out the door. That's the dosing. That's what the physician's desk reference says to take. We're with you and I working with someone, it's, there needs to be some trust there.
Well, hormone replacement is just not, prescribe this and off you go. It does take a little bit of, finesse. You've always called it, it's a combination of the art and science, which I think medicine in general is an art and a science. hormone replacement is a lot more art than it is science. I hate to say it. Now, granted, there, you know, there's a lot of science that goes into the things we recommend, the things we talk about, the benefits of estrogen, the benefits of progesterone on not only how a woman feels, but also on those age-related problems. That is becoming very distinct and clear from the research. But you know, she even says here that there's so much conflicting information or contradicting information, which, you know, there's not one way to do it, and everyone has their approach. Mm-hmm. You know, our approach is not the same as someone else's. You know, this is just what we've learned to do over the years. And yeah, so to our you know, Canadian neighbor, not too far away, hopefully this was helpful. Any last comments about Leah?
No, this was great. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.